Hi, and welcome to episode 85 of Fully Boosted, a War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Pete.
And I'm Brandon.
Yeah, you might as well introduce yourself. Like, nobody else is
here. Well, I didn't know if you were going to give me the guest thing or not.
No, I had a whole thing talking about how you were, like, the craziest, the only motherfucker crazy enough to, like, even think about playing Connie B, and then you flew across country, and then did it.
That's great. People like that.
Yeah. But then you introduced yourself and kind of ruined it.
Yeah. Although it was kind
of
cool.
It's just the three of us, though, so it's a little bit of a weird thing. So you guys were nice enough, basically, to invite me on, and I'm already taking the reins. Like, fuck you, Grant, I'm the host now. But, like, you guys were nice enough to invite me on, and we had planned to kind of have this post-lock and load chat, and to basically put, not necessarily an end, but to, like, put a, you know, what is it, like a ribbon or like to like tie the bow on like the Constance experiment that I've been on for the last 3 months. So that's what we came on here to do. That's kind of why we're doing it with so few people. Well, it's not because I like to hear myself talk, but shut up. I do like to hear myself
it's
talk.
Not also not because Brad and Ryan aren't around at all either. It's just definitely because we just want to have a nice intimate moment with Brandon.
And that's why I brought cognac.
Although, to be honest, I really have been wanting to talk about this for the last 3 months, and being sworn to secrecy isn't fun.
Yes, you guys kind of kept the secret. Let's talk about it. So, my goal, and we're going to get right into it, my goal, since SOO, since beating Brad on that fateful day in the Croak Zone, was essentially to master Constance Blaze. Now, mastering something takes a lot longer than 3 months, and we all know that, but that was the amount of time that I had before lock and load. And after that game, unbeknownst to Brad, whom allowed me or tried to disallow me to destroy him with Connie, right? I basically was like, okay, I'm going to be a Constance Blaze player nonstop until I figure out how to win with her. And that's kind of where it started. So that original list was like this horrible Signar list, and over the next 3 months, I, like, evolved it. And I set myself some goals. I had a goal going into this year, and my goal has always been to not be tilted in War Machine. It's very easy for, like, dice and things like that to tilt you, and I've always coined a phrase that I tell people. I'm like, I'm tilt-proof. I'm totally fucking not. That's a complete lie, right? I come in like, oh, yeah, I'm tilt-proof, but, like, I roll ones, you know, a couple times in a row or something like that, and I get just as mad, or I misplay and things bother me. But that is always my goal. Whether I'll ever achieve it, I don't know. But my goal for this year was to become tilt-proof. And it's almost like the goal of being tilt-proof kind of ties into my second goal, which is essentially to master and play Constance Blaze. And, of course, you guys knew my goal, which was to get to day two of one of the events with her, whether it was IG, which is asking, you know, a little bit more, or Masters, which is obviously a huge grouping of players and more rounds. So both of those things I thought would have been a very fitting accomplishment to do with her.
Let me stop you there real quick, because I want to go back to the first point, because I think there's a lot of merit in that. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but when you talk about tilt-proof, you also, at least in the discussion you and I had, you talk about blaming yourself and the decisions that you made versus dice, what your opponent did. Like basically getting in the mentality of being able to look at a game and go, well, it's not because my opponent rolled a 14. Like, why was I in the position I was in to allow him to even roll that dice, right? Is that part of that mentality?
Yeah, the goal of being tilt-proof really, you know, ties into playing somebody and knowing, like, my loss is only blamed on my decision in this game. It's not blamed on the fact that Connie's bad. I dropped Connie into a bad matchup. Like, it's the caster's fine. The list is sound. Like, the dice are the dice. They're random no matter what. Like, sure, a game can come down to you rolling low dice. They do sometimes and stuff. But, like, ultimately, like, a good player puts himself in that position where luck can affect the outcome, right? So, yeah, ultimately, it's just, like, me just trying to be, like, when I play the game, I'm just not ever going to, like, lose time over being, like, man, I can't believe I did that. And, like, sit there and, like, stew over it. You know what I mean? And it happens, and I state it, and I'm like, oh, misplay there, you know, like, but yeah, I don't want
to
lose time.
Do you have to be able to, because that's something I don't necessarily know that I can do, but do you have to be able to analyze an entire game, like go sit down after the game's over and go turn by turn, or is it more of, okay, this was the key placement that I made that I shouldn't have? Like,
yeah, I think you're right there. I think the second part, like you analyze like specifics in a game, mm-hmm. but then I think if you're in a feeling where you're like, I was trying to remember, there was one I played fairly recently. Rian makes me feel that way sometimes when we play. He'll play like Assyria, and I'll be like, when I was playing Scar, there was like games that I would play, and I'd be like, I don't know how I could even beat that. And it's like, well, it comes down to like turns before, you know, like little placement of models, like the little things, right? That's what good players say. They say the little things. And it's like, yeah, well, yeah, it really is the little things. So you can trace it all the way back, but you'll find that it generally is a couple of small things that you do that like really muff the game, or that you feel like can make a difference. And it's all about feeling you can make a difference, right? You know, you've beaten that guy at your game store and he's like, man, if I walk 2 inches back, I win that game. And you're like, no, clown. Like, I was going to whoop that ass anyway. You know? And it's like, well, you got to have an understanding, and you have to start feeling that way, because if you're not identifying something you did wrong, then like, why the hell are we even playing? You know,
right.
It's got to win in a loss. So,
all right. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. I just think that's always a point that people tend to you tend to hear that a lot in tournaments and cons, where people blame other things instead of just being self-reflective and, well, what did I do to put myself in there in that position? So I always think that's a good top mini.
And blame's not even all that bad. I'm probably going to blame a bunch of shit by the end of this. So, you know, let's not throw too many stones in our glass house here, right?
You're right. All right, but, carry on. I mean, let's talk about the
Connie list. Is fine,
yeah.
Right? Caster is fine. Like, everything is good. And it's just a matter of, like, knowing my stuff and being like, it wasn't Connie's fault. It's my fault. I'll take the blame here. So,
well, let's start with the beginning of why Constance Blaze.
Well, like I said, I mean, I beat Brad's ass in the Croak Zone, and it was, like, super easy game, and I was like, that's obviously way too strong, and it's probably going to get nerfed, so I might as well ride Connie to a couple of free Masters wins. So that was what I thought, you know? Because Brad crumbled. It wasn't even, like, a close fucking game. That's it.
That's it. That was the reason. Just like,
no,
fuck
no,
that
I mean,
guy.
I have a history with her. I love her. She's just cool as hell. I like the feat. I love a fighting Warcaster. She's probably like the best fighting Warcaster in Mercs. Gorton can put some pow out there. Damiano can do a little fighting. You know, I mean, like, these are all like really closety. Like, as long as you've got a Marowyn model around, which is a little tough sometimes, don't get me wrong, but as long as you got a Marowyn model around, she's a mat 9 pow 13 weapon master with reach, threat 13 if she Crusaders calls, and blessed, and she has Flashing Blade. So go ahead and tell me what's better than that, because she's basically like the world's shittiest Terminus, and Terminus is already the world's shittiest Terminus. So lucky her, right? But I just thought that's what I wanted to play, you know.
Was part of it that it was Constance Blaze, which is like the epitome of the shit caster that people always compare bad things to? Like, was part of it the allure of just being like, you know what, I'm going to challenge myself to take the thing everybody says is all awful that I like, and just, I'm going to get good with her. Like, fuck everybody.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting aspect to like mastering something that, or like trying to play at a high level with something that other people maybe don't know, because I'm far from mastering it. Like, you know, throughout my games, you'll see that it's a little bit of a cluster, but she's also kind of like a weird entrapment caster where she, like, people will like arrive on your feet turn in the middle of your army, and they're like swinging all their weapons, and they're like, yeah, I'm killing your models, you're an idiot. And then all of a sudden your models stop dying like halfway through the turn, and they're like, why am I here? Why is my model here? Why am I in the middle of this army?
All of
and
these
then you get to like sandwich
bad.
Them.
Yeah,
it's really neat. So it's just a neat play style. It's a very, remember a long time ago I told you guys kind of the concept of her, and I'll talk about my list. I'll tell you my list, and then I can explain the concept of her. So when I started playing her, I played when I like auto beat Brad supereasygame.com. When I beat him, I was playing her in Signar, but I knew that Mercs require, like, Mercs have the toolbox she needs, because you can win a game with Mercs with any Warcaster. Like, if the game just, like, turns into, like, a like, mush into each other grind fest, and then all of a sudden you have, like, these, like, really weird toolboxy solos in the back, like Kel Balak and Iris and, like, Ayana and Holt, and, like, all of a sudden they just start clearing the game out, and you're just like, no, sorry, friend, like, you just don't have models to deal with these anymore, and we've ground each other out. It's a weird play style. It's not your plan, but it does happen that way sometimes. And then when I started building the list, it just started like flowing into what I wanted it to do. So my final list ended up being regulars, which is just kind of the generic theme. And it's Connie with Gallant, her character Jack, which is good and bad. He's really tough to kill. He's 13 defense for no damn reason, and he has Spell Ward, which certain armies can't deal with, namely certain Krix casters and a few others. But in most of your matchups, he's just going to be like a really big beater, and he can overpower models because he can use Connie's Transference. Her Transference is called Radiance of Morrow.
Yep.
And it can affect any Morrowind model, guns or melee, which we'll get to here in a second. So I have Gallant, and I have a Mariner. That's my battle group. I also have Pete Iris, Kelbalok, Hawk, and Harlan Versch. Those are my free models. And then I bought myself a Rupert, Max Pressgangers, Max Sea Dogs with Mr. Walls, Men Precursor Knights, two squads of Men Forge Guard, and Ion and Holt. Okay, so this is the concept of the army. This is how you play the army. This is a very structured army that wants to play a certain way. Not particularly hard to do, though. The Pressgangers and the Sea Dogs, usually the Sea Dogs, will engage the enemy or force an engagement or just get kind of near them, and they will be your token models that become souls. And then up behind them run Forge Guard and your Men Precursors, who can either shield wall if you think they'll actually take incoming damage or just run to a good position. Those models, along with the two Jacks, are your hammers, right? So we're playing like third edition fantasy here. So we collect all the souls from the jamming models. This is all theory. We collect all the souls from the jamming models, which means you push my 18 armor models to like 23, 24, 28, you know, like wherever you want to, as long as you keep killing models. And then I go, okay, you can't kill these hammers, and then I counter-strike you with the hammer models. Is it good? Well, it's hard countered by like half the meta because RFP is so prevalent. Trollbloods have an RFP theme. Scorn have an RFP theme. Legion, no, not Legion. What are those other clowns called? Retribution of Skyra have an RFP theme. And they almost gave Krix one in that CID until I was like screaming along with everybody else that that would be absurd. And I was a Krix player at the time. So RFP's everywhere. And then you go over to snacking on Gatorman. And that makes things even worse because she's actually pretty good in the medium base spam. So it just gets worse and worse, right? So I did add Hawk to the list so that my Pressgangers and my Sea Dogs can actually fight. Just so everybody's aware, Pressgangers are one of probably the better units in the game. They can take over a flank if you leave them alone. Sea Dogs are far from one of the best units in the game. However, with Crusader's Call and No Quarter, they can threaten 13 and a half. And versus a medium base army that's not prepared for that or just doesn't have absurd stats like Trollblood Madric does, I can run Hawk up and become Weapon Masters and surprise people with the full frontal alpha and then collect their souls and away we go. Generally, they just chip people for like one or two damage and I wonder why I have them in my army. But the follow-up...
Right, hold on. Yeah. Slow down. Because I'm not going to lie. As you've been talking, I've been reading cards. And so what makes Pressgangers so good? Is it their advanced deployment, their speed? What is it?
Okay. Pressgangers have nothing to do with Constants. Pressgangers are just one of the best units in the game. Pound for pound, they're tough, they have fair enough stats to do stuff, and they can take over a flank if you don't allocate enough resources to them, because when there's two of them in base, they'll Shanghai you, you join the press gang. What's that? You're an Ogre Chosen? All right, well, put on a pirate costume. You're going to join
the press gang. You're a Sea Dog now.
What's that? You're a fucking Circle Tree? You're joining the press gang. Everybody joins the press gang, all right? If you let that go unchecked...
Well, I don't think that works. Isn't it living enemy warrior model?
Yeah, man, that tree is living.
A tree's living? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they're not constructs.
Okay.
It's time to check that shit.
All right.
We're on a podcast. We don't tell the truth.
You're right.
So the thing is like the Pressgangers can just overwhelm a flank. The Sea Dogs do not have that ability. However, the Pressgangers can add to the Sea Dog unit. In my experience, you don't usually do that because when the Pressgangers engage, there will be like areas where only like one Pressganger is, so you spawn a Pressganger into base, so he provides Gang and Shanghai to that other unit. So they're very interesting. They're actually a really cool unit. 20 Pressgangers, not dumb. Like, if you start a list with 20 Pressgangers, you're going to have a weird game in a certain list, and they're not going to be able to deal with you. But you have to fight him. Like, I've overwhelmed Slaughter Fleet lists. Like, that list is, like, all Berserk Overtake, and I'm like, I got too many pirates, too many table legs, and I'm going to seduce your troll girl. Like, that's it. That's my strat. So, like, Press Gangers on their own merits are a very strong unit, as are Forge Guard, as is Ion and Holt. The weird things are, like, the Sea Dogs and the Precursor Knights and stuff. But, yeah, to kind of cut it short, really what it comes down to is, like, Connie is a pretty solid fighting caster. If you send models into her back line, like, if a Slayer wanders into her back line, because we are dropping this into Gatsby 3, if a Slayer wanders into her back line, she can go whoop its ass as long as she has a flanking Morrowind model, which we have the 7 precursors, because the flag can't flank. We have Harlan Versch, and we have Gallant, okay? Now, while we're talking about Harlan Versch, he is also, like, an awkward win condition, as well as, like, a weird late-game piece that really takes out the trash. Because Harlan is a Purgation-blessed range 10, POW 10 pistol that fires D3 plus 1, and it can be boosted by her transference spell called Radiance of Morrow. Got it. So, he can 4-dice shit. A lot of people don't know that.
I've actually started to take him in some of my heavy metal lists as a solo to camp a flag with stealth and do a little bit of work into some shit if somebody puts up an upkeep. And that's even without transference or Radiance of Morrow. So I can imagine with that he can actually really put a hurting on some stuff.
Absolutely. I've had him shooting Angelus off the table all on his own before because it had admonition on it. In one game he kills some Chosen, you know, so like he's definitely got play. I can go on and on. It's a very deep list. When you play the list, and I'm not here telling anybody I've cracked the code, I don't have easy games with this list. I'm taking the long road of War Machine every time I play this list. I like it. I'm willing to accept the loss because I'm playing this list. It does not bother me. I came prepared for losing. Like, it is not the best list in the game, okay? I'm not telling you I figured out anything. But what might be is my off list, which is essentially, like, I paired my Ghost Fleet to it. So, like, when I was playing my Scar list and people weren't prepared for it, I paired Ghost Fleet to it because everybody wanted to fight Ghost Fleet and they were ready for that, which is just, I literally, this is, because I'm a very creative guy, I went and looked at the last tournament Charles Soong played in, and I copy-pasted his Osram list into my phone, and then I tested it, and then I told people I made a really good Osram list.
I hear that's just how you make a list your own. You just take a list and win something with it, and then you're just like, yeah, this is mine now.
No, I didn't win anything.
I know you didn't, but yeah.
And I was like, you guys like my Osram list? Yeah, it's pretty good. Oh yeah, Sim has been asking me about my Osram list. So the Osram list, we'll just scroll through it pretty quick because Soong plays it a lot or plays the variations of it. It's Osram, 3 drillers, 2 bashers, 4 blasters, which are the sprays, 1 gunner, which is the direct fire one, Ragman, Gorman, Orin, Kelbalok, all for free, Anastasia DeBray, the cannon, and Hammer Dwarves, max squad. You have 2 advanced moves from the army. The only unit I really want to specify in here or model I want to specify in here before we move on is the Bashers. I came into this list knowing I enjoyed the concept of the Basher, thinking that anything that makes you slam is good because slam is a good rule. Like, if we used it more, we would probably be better players. Mm-hmm. But we don't. But when the Basher, you play him, he makes you want to slam. So he, like, naturally makes you play good rules. But the package is endless. The Energizer allows him to line up his slams better. He's like, his grid is the dumbest thing on earth.
It's so stupid.
So dumb. If you have time and you want to cry yourself to sleep, you can just print out the blaster grid, put it on your pillow, and you can just soak it with tears because you will never kill a Basher until it's off the table. Like, it's always going to do something to bother you.
Why does it have a head in the first and then the third column? It's got cortex across the four. Its columns are stupid.
Basher is the best thing ever. I was originally like, why would I take this Basher when I can take a driller for one more point? Oh, buddy. It is, like, the greatest model on earth. I understand everybody now. I'm glad I joined the club. Please, people, don't play bashers. The Signar players really don't. They can't handle it. You can't keep doing that. Sorry. So those are my lists. Charles Soong is jealous of my Osram list. No, not really. And it played really well, so I knew that, like, I can go be a unique butterfly with Connie because I can play Osram into a lot of the bad matchups, which, honestly, she has plenty. So that leaves a lot of open space to play Osram. I guess I'll just go into the tournament. Basically, I'll just review my games.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, and you already kind of touched on it, so there's not a ton here, but the theory was kind of the same, right? You have a super strong Osram list that you're going to dangle over people's face that they're going to get scared of and go, well, I got to play this because if he drops Osram, yes, I have to play that. And then meanwhile, you're standing there going, I don't care. I'm going to play Connie unless I can't.
He's like crushingly oppressive into Signar.
Yeah.
He can like push Legion off the table in a lot of cases, maybe not all cases. I think Primal Terrors now has game into him, but they don't have Hellmouth versus him. There's so many things that just go good for you. He might be on the... He's definitely, like, right at the top level, right? Like, he's a top five. We won't get into the grading system. I know you like to make lists and grade things, but...
Well, we also like to...
I don't know what you're talking about.
We also like to call things sweepers or pivots, so...
Yeah, he's both. Anyway, so my first round...
Yes! We got him!
I play in Sloan, and... Guy, I write everybody's name down. I just always feel like I should respect the player, but I can't read the first name that I wrote down. So we're going to call this gentleman Mr. Benson, because that's what I wrote. It's just an Osram field day. Like, he comes forward, and he has a better first turn than I've seen almost any of the Sloan players in testing have, which I didn't test it all that many times, but I had to try against Gibbs' list, because you guys got me all worried about it. And he did whoop my ass at the Sioux with Cray. So I was like, I got to get that guy if I see him. But, I come forward, he kills a couple of bunnies, my bashers slam in weird directions, and it comes down to like a one-hand throw and some basher slams, which kills, they knock Sloan down and I just kill her. It wasn't necessarily like an easy game, he took a bigger risk and like really gunned into my army, and he killed almost like all the bunnies, but like I just don't think that it was enough. Clearly, it wasn't enough.
Was he playing the 5x5 or a different? No,
this guy actually had some storm stuff going on.
Oh, okay.
So he had some infantry, some storm lances. I've seen people do that variation, but you know, it's not to like discredit the game. Of course, if I go through anything quick, because I am trying to make time here, but it's just it was Osram's element, and he kind of like walked into it. I think he had a better prepared list than most people for Osram, but it's still he's really impressive into Signar. So my second round is into Aaron Whale, who I'm a big fanboy over, and he drops Gatsby 3 Slayers into me. His off list is my Scar list, and I know that Connie plays good into Scar, but I did bring Connie here to beat Gatsby 3.
Hold on. You mean his Scar list?
It's shitty that I'm calling it my Scar list.
Yeah, calm down, buddy.
I'm just so used to in my meta, like when they're saying Scar, I'm like my Scar list or like the one with the cavalry. So I sound like an ass clown to the world, and that's great. So Aaron stole my Scar list. No, not at all.
I mean, he's come on our podcast and admitted that he did, so it's fine.
Oh, he doesn't have to do that. He plays the list like 20 times better than me. I'm aggressive to a fault with it. I'm like, can I come to your side of the table? Do you have to king my models? People are like, no, I can kill him, though. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Great, let's do it.
Yeah, and he's like meticulous, like makes smart decisions and stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to make so many machine rates. And they're like, you're dead. Yeah, the list is obviously really good, but that's irrelevant. So he drops Slayers into me. Now, I made jokes being like, watch me go beat Aaron Whale at the tournament with this Connie list. And, I don't want to spoil anything, but I did it. which, I mean, this is like this game alone is worth me flying to Seattle. I mean that, like, completely. It was a really amazing game. And playing Aaron is something I've wanted to do because I've been fanboying over him since WTC. Super sweet guy, right? So we're playing Spread the Net. The game really goes how I want it to. Vociferin comes up kind of next to a forest. Now, the Mariner which advance moves, walks, fires 20-inch total threat, 15 inches on his gun, 5-inch movement, and then, of course, he advance moves, so he's a little further up. By the way, has to be within 1 inch of a model to fire. The Mariner goes forward and kills Vociferin. That is a 14-point model that's in my army to do that.
That's it. That's all you want him to do.
That's it. And he can die. Take my Vociferin whale. Run away with it. I don't care. I've got the Vociferin. And the reason is, if we haven't made this clear, is because Constant's feat has no soul-protecting clause. Like, it's all about soul collection, so she grabs the souls of the closest models. If you have that same clause, you get to take closest. Or if you're Vociferin, you just, like, suck souls out of my feet and have a better feat turn than me. So literally, I have no freaking feat until I kill Vociferin. And if they have a soul trapper, I have three less of a feat. So, yes, my hard counter is actually, they have a hard counter to me. And that's what makes it exciting. So, oh, I'm so bad. I'm so bad at this game. Why are you people listening to me? Okay, so Mariner walks forward, kills Vociferin, the AoE kills the Soul Trapper. I'm ready to just, like, throw my models because that's all I want to do. I'm so excited.
You're like, done. This is it.
But I've got it.
Yeah.
Now, I hate to tell you, but I've tested this a lot, and I killed Vociferin a lot in testing versus different players, usually the first time we played and then never again. And what generally happens is I still have a really fucking tough game ahead of me. So I smash the pirates into him. I force him to fight me. I get chip damage on the slayers, nothing crazy. And I force him to engage the front screening portion of my army while I'm under feet. So he sees that I'm under feet, and I'm really, I think I was like one or two focus. I might have had none. I can't fully remember. But at that exact point, the game doesn't feel like it can go a whole lot better than me, for me. And then he starts to look at it, and he's like, I think I can kill you. And he's like looking at it. So at one point, he tries to throw a model out. Well, Connie still gets a soul from collateral. I thought he was trying to like throw it out of my range, but it was still in my range, so she still gets it. So I got the soul for that, and so I'm up on armor. He comes in, and he doesn't give me any souls because Gatsby comes up and takes them personally in 2-inch range, and he throws the Mariner at me. Okay? So throws a heavy warjack at my warcaster, which is going to knock the warjack down and knock her down. Until I'm like, well, it's a Mariner, so it has lash and sea legs, which means it can't be knocked down, and models and base with it can't be knocked down.
Oh, shit.
So threw the Mariner into Connie, and she, like, hooked her belt on him, and she was like, sweet, let's hang out together. Why'd you come over here? So he, like, landed on his feet. Connie's still standing there, and Aaron's like, well, I threw the wrong model. And I'm like, holy shit, can you believe that that happened? Like, so we have a laugh about it, and we continue on, and he's clearing models because he loses his assassination run when I can't be knocked down. And he counterfeits me, which is a very, very, very good counterfeit to my feet. Again, glad I've got this sweet hard counter, right? Because I spend a lot of focus, and sometimes I just can't get out of his control area. So I end up feeding him a lot of souls, and I think I'm in a fairly okay position. And I clear a lot of slayers. Like, I do a lot of damage. And he comes forward, and I believe he shoots 6 hellfires at me. So again, this is not a story of me outplaying people, right? So he shoots 6 hellfires at me and leaves me on 4 health. I think that's almost exact. I was camping like 2 or 3 focus, and I end up living with like 4 health. It was fairly average too, so it wasn't anything crazy, but it was definitely a good run, and I certainly would have gone for it if I was him. I'm lucky to be alive. At that point, I clear quite a few slayers, and I force them into a box, and I start doing scoring elements, and I put a wall of untargetable by spells, what are they called? Spell warded models between me and him, and I have Gallant in front of me, and I'm like, cool, I'm good. He still gets a line on me with his arc node, but I brought all of my models back to about 10 inches away from him, and I know he's going to want a blood boon to get a free spell. So he walks into my control range, blood boons, shoots a hellfire at me. At this point, I inform him that it has -2 to the damage roll because he's undead. And that is on Constance Blaze's card, and who the fuck knows that? So he has to roll a 13 to kill me because I'm camping the exact amount of focus of Hellfires. He rolls no damage, and then I think the next one rolls like 11 or 12. So he comes really damn close to killing me. And at this point, Connie's in charge range, charges forward with flank, and kills Gatsby. We have a laugh the whole time. I mean, it was like a really fun game. And it's definitely one that's like in my brain bank. Like, it's one that I'm going to remember for a long time. And that's why I wanted to kind of focus on it and talk about it a little bit. So that one was sweet. I got to beat Aaron Whale with my dumbass Constance list.
Did you hold that over his head like the rest of the weekend?
Only in the way that I do.
Okay. So 200%. Got it.
The guy is just such a great opponent, and it was, I don't know, man. It's just a memorable one. It really was. My next round was in a Lilith 2, played by Alex was his name. I brought in Osram because I think his other list had some Hellmouths, and I was like, I know that Osram's good into this, and I didn't need another Connie risk going at that exact moment. I liked Osram's armies into him. If it was medium-based spam, I would have definitely played Connie. So I don't have any knocks on him. I pretty much just like chased him off the board with Osram. Pretty typical game into a gunline with Osram. And I had a nice force to hide behind. I go into round four. I'm playing against Chris Orr, who is a player that I have a shitload of respect for. And I had never gotten a chance to play, so I was excited about that. He drops Animag into me, and I'm like, we're going Connie. Like, we're going to live and die by the sword. As soon as we deploy, my Mariner, Kel, and Iris knock out a Hellmouth. He didn't, like, deploy in, like, Kel's aiming range, but he's like, oh, it's kind of a misplay. But at the same time, like, your positioning for Hellmouths in that is, like, super non-aggressive because Iris and Kel are such a great counter to Hellmouths. Because they can just 3-3-3 it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just do my normal thing. Like, it's a great game for me at this point. I've got a Hellmouth off the table. I put my Pirates in front of him. I went first. He runs all his models up. I'm thinking maybe he'll come into range of my, you know, my Weapon Master Pirates. Because maybe he's not aware that Hawk is going to give me Weapon Master versus Warrior models. So he does walk into it. I mean, it's not so much me being like, gotcha! You know, he has that, like, bond of gizzards and stones or whatever, where he gets the armor, so his shit's pretty high armor. I sit there, I'm like, can I repudiate it off of him? Because Connie has repudiate, which is exciting. And then I'm like, oh no, Harlan has purgation, precursors have blessed. I then end up sending, like, none of those models into those models, so I should have repudiated it. We kind of, like, stall into each other for a little while, and I have some jam issues, but the board is pretty good for me. It has, like, an obstruction and like, a wall. And his, what's that, like, battle crab thing? The giant crab, the, like, what's that bastard called? The, like, the tangle crab.
The Blightbringer.
Yeah, that guy. So he comes, like, forward, and he summons tangle crab. So the tangle crab's running around in front of me, and I'm just like, you can't actually land in a lot of places, so he's just, like, armoring up. Orr plays the left side really good. He had a men squad of Ogryn flanking his big squad with the old, like, Gorag Meni or whatever. And that squad, like, the men's squad, allows him to, like, kind of push forward, clear jam, and then let the bigger unit go through. So it was, like, it was really well played. He destroys my left flank, but I'm, like, keeping Gallant in reserve. My right flank goes really well. So we're in a really great game. We're playing on the two rectangles. I never
remember. Recon 2.
Yeah, sure. So we're playing on Recon 2. Great game, close game. And at one point, I'm like, okay, I'm going to send Gallant in because I noticed that he has too much fury to get all the fury off the fucking the doodlebug or whatever its name is. So I'm like, all right, the doodlebug has, like, really bad threshold. It's like 7 or something. So I'm like, that thing's going to fail and I'm going to win this game because of it. So Gallant goes over there, kills some models. Doodlebug passes his threshold check, goes in and kills Gallant. So I'm like, all right, we're going to make this bet again because he put himself in the exact same position because he's got some threats because Connie's threatening Animag because she's standing on the end of the zone threatening his flag. So he does the same thing. He camps some fury. I never attack him. This time, Mariner goes into Animag. Doodlebug goes crazy, chases Ayana. And I'm like, yes, thank you, God, right? Because now I can actually win the game at the end of this turn unless Animag kills the Mariner, which is, you know, the toughest of all warjacks. 12 defense, armor 17, super badass. Thankfully, Animag's not, like, the best fighter on earth, doesn't kill her, and I end up winning on scenario. Again, brutal game, super fun, super great opponent that I respect the hell out of. Like, how can you ask for better shit than this? I had a great time, at least.
Now, when you sent the list of games to me and kind of had us updated, I was like, oh man, this is awesome. Like, good round.
Yeah, man, I was excited. I had a lot of people, like, because when I went last year, it was like, last year was like my first time, like, kind of on the circuit, you know? And I obviously had a great year playing Crix and kind of at one point being like an underdog and playing stuff that people didn't know. And then it was big and known, but it was still playing well for me. And like the supporters and like the people that I know and like the people that I know at the events is all like ramped up so much that like I can like come and like tell these stories and like have a good time and like share stories with people. Not that I couldn't before. It's always been a welcoming community, but like now I know everybody. So my round five is Makaida 2, which is played by Corey Burns, who is one of my favorite players. I'm actually wearing his jersey when I play him, not right now to like sleep in, but like when I was playing. And we have a grind fest. He plays Makaida 2, and I drop Osram into him. And essentially it comes to like, Osram's models are in your face. You can't kill them. We like battle it out. He does all like the I spend fury, my guys don't die thing over and over and over again. And like, it's just a slow attrition game, and I finally went on like turn 5 or 6. His goal was to see how far he could go with Makaida 2, and I don't think he ever ended up dropping his Jalam list, which, if you guys remember, was at SOO. The thing about Corey is, like, I always look at his list, and I'm like, which I guess I can't, again, throw rocks, right? But I'm like, man, Corey, those are the worst fucking lists I've ever seen. And then Corey's like, yeah, I'm 5-0. And I'm like, huh. You know, he's like, yeah, this is really good in the Signar. I'm like, sure. Like, I just believe him now because, you know, he wins. But he's a really articulated player, a really great sport. I know that he had, like, a small issue in one of his games, and he immediately DQ'd himself. And, like, I don't even know if that's, like, right to, like, bring up necessarily. But I think that, like, the community should know that, like, he's out there, and there's many people who are out there. And those people, if they ever mess up a turn or anything and they do something wrong, like, they're just going to come straight out. So if there's players out there that are like, oh, like a tournament player is going to take advantage of you, or like you go into a game and like he's going to move fast or trick me or whatever, I promise you there are people like Corey out there and stuff that if there's any sort of mess up or something that they feel like they've done to, you know, obfuscate the game, the guy DQ'd himself. He's just that much of a stand-up guy.
Yeah, you know? That's crazy.
And it was over, I think it was over him playing the range on like a spell like wrong by 2. Again, I don't know the situation in the game. I just know that Corey Burns is a stand-up human being, and I respect the hell out of him, and I was just happy that I got to play him and beat him with his jersey on.
Yeah, so at this point, because we're obviously texting you, and you're messaging us in between, and now you're 5-0 with Connie, and we're just losing our shit, because super not that I didn't have faith in you, but I wasn't sure you were going to go to Lock and Load and just be like, yeah, guys, no big deal, 5-0 with Connie, suck a dick.
We had so many theories running around in our house that, like, he's just been, like, setting up tables and sending us pictures.
Right, just
to,
joking.
Yeah. Like, he's going to play Magnus 2 and Osram 2 or something. Just, you know, it's not going to be Connie. He's doing everything in his power to not play Connie
right.
And make it look like he is.
He's going
to
audible and play Crix, but the Merc thing has really just been bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys knew about all my practice games. Like, I told
well,
you.
Well,
like,
we knew you doctored. We knew you could have doctored a practice game.
That's fair. I did doctor some of those. Actually, all of those. That was my first game with her when I came to the event. But no, so at this point, like, I've accomplished my goal. Like, I truly feel like I did it. And it's not the loftiest goal. It doesn't have to be, right? Like, it was the goal I set. I wanted to get to day 2 with Connie. I had my tilt-free day that I planned to have. Like, I did a great job. I didn't have any, like, crazy times or anything where I felt like things were out of place for me. Played against a bunch of great opponents. And, I mean, I got to play against Aaron Whale and Chris Orr and Corey Burns. Like, these are all people that, like, I look up to and, like, I enjoy watching them play. And I got to see a WTC and stuff. And it's just like, man, like, it doesn't get better than this shit. Like, that day alone would have been worth going to Seattle for. If I went to Seattle and then I just fucking sat in that 90s retro carpeted hotel. It's the weirdest carpet I've ever seen in my life. Like, just with no AC, sitting in a corner, I would have been like, you know, that was kind of worth the trip. Except for those 2 days with that fucking weird carpet with no AC. That's what I would have thought. Yeah, mission accomplished, right? So day two happens. I'll just go quick through day two, right? Round six was against Grim Angus, played by Jaden. Jaden went on to win it. I think he played this this list almost every game. It was like the Hoochaller and the two War Wagons and the Sea King. He beat the living shit out of me. It's not so much that I don't like to talk about losses. I just don't have much to say about the game. It's pretty brutal for me. What else?
Do you want to talk about that that game at all? Or do we want to go on?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't have any, like, negative feelings towards Jaden or anybody watching the game or anything like that. Essentially, there was, like, a rule during the game that I made the statement, too. Like, I openly said to him, like, is this how this works? And in my head, I had a certain thing, like, twisted in my head where, like, the way that the spell, it was a return fire. And I was like, the way that return fire works with Colossals is kind of like the way that this will work. And, like, it made sense in my head. Your brain kind of twists stuff. And I said it, like, this is how it works. And he was like, yeah. And, like, I don't think he was being malicious. I don't think anything was being conveyed wrong. It influenced some of my decisions in the game. I don't know that it would have affected the game. You know, he beat the shit out of me. And I don't truly know that a lot of it would have mattered had I known differently. But I found out as soon as the game was over that we had played the rule wrong the entire game. And, you know, we still shook hands. He said, you know, I said, good game, good luck. You know, I hope you win. And I don't have any hard feelings about it. So that's kind of really all I want.
Yeah, that's the important part.
Yeah, so it was good. I don't have
Yeah, and it's not like we're revealing anything. There's a post or a thread on the Lorma Hordes forum that it's discussed, and you know, Jaden does admit that he played the spell wrong. So
yeah, I only wanted it out there because, like you said, Pete, like it's been talked about. So hear it from the source. You know, it happened with Brandon, and it was his mistake as well. And it is what it is. And that's
it. Was truly it was more my mistake than anything, because I've played this game for 15 fucking years, and I should know the rules. Like, it was, I truly blame myself for it more than anything.
Yep. I mean, you could have looked it up just as easily. So
yes,
so that's it. Absolutely. So we move on. And so we got round seven,
which is my last round of Masters. Jaden goes on to win. I go on to play Brett Fogel. It's the first time I've ever got to play Brett Fogel. We actually had, like, a really good time. The game is long because it's Maelok versus Osram. But the best part of the game is Fogel gets first turn, runs at me. He has his Throgs, like, fully within the threat ranges of the Bashers if I feat. Maybe even if I don't feat, but I think I had to feat, I'm pretty sure. And I look at him, and I'm just like, you ever seen a first turn feat? And he's, like, kind of laughing about it. And I'm like, we're going to fight. We're going to play War Machine. And there's, like, a couple of people watching, and, like, we just all kind of had a laugh. Boom, I put my feat token down, and I just went into his army, and I killed his Throgs, and, like, I just started getting an upper hand. And in hindsight, at the end of the game, we kind of talked about it, and it was like, actually, that stupid-ass play, Brandon, that was a really good play. That, like, maybe won you the game. So it was cool. Like, we just drew our battle lines. It's the first time I'd ever played against Maelok, and Oren just hugged all three of his drillers, and it turned out to play really well for me. It's a good matchup for Osram, and I truly didn't know, but it felt good. So I was happy to find that out before IG. So yeah, end of the day, I end up getting third, which is, again, like, blew me away. I was really excited for that. You know, wasn't first like last year, but it was more than enough to make me 100% satisfied, or more. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely got everything I wanted to up to that point. And it wasn't even over. I got to go play in IG after that. I get to go play in round one. I got Andrew Swedberg.
Real quick, Brandon, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
So walking the tables of Masters, looking at all the lists, was there anything that like piqued your interest or stuff you haven't seen before?
So I don't know. Like, I built my name sitting around in the fucking garage looking at models, right? Like, I'm like, all I like is, like, all the weird stuff. So I guess, like, I don't get super surprised by weird stuff. I don't think I played against anything that, like, blew me away. Corey plays some weird stuff. Like, Corey didn't have turtles. in either of his Scorn lists, which Scorn players are like, you know, how dare you do that? But he obviously plays just fine without him. I can't really come up with anything. I really can't. I wish I could. It's a good question. If I come up with something, I definitely will let you know.
Well, it's one of those things, and I don't know how we fix it, but every time you see lists from an event, it's the top three lists, you know? And I want to start knowing what the top eight was, not the top three.
Well, the top three had Constance in it, so I guess...
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a tough one.
I mean, I don't necessarily 100% agree, but I do understand what you're saying. People should read further into stuff. A lot of the decisions that people make are based on meta. Like, the Scar List has stuck around and played well into multiple metas, but it was also a function of the meta shifting to, like, armor and medium-based infantry, and Meat Mountain don't like +5 strength, +5 armor models charging it with guided hand, or guided whatever the hell it's called. So, I mean, not everything just sticks around, right? There wasn't as much convergence, for example. When we played at War Machine Weekend, when I was in the War Machine Weekend finals, like 30% of the field was convergence. I played against convergence like every round almost. There's no Kador. You walk around and you're just like, it's just no Kador. And you know, for Signar being this enormous boogeyman that we all talk about all the time, because it, in a good player's hands, Signar is very terrifying. It still has like these like weird pitfall matchups where you just don't see it like as much as you'd like to think. So while I'm incredibly like happy that I have an Osram who like walks into Signar, it's also like if you came to me and you were like, I'm going to go to this tournament and I don't have a particularly hard Signar counter, I wouldn't like yell at you. You know what I mean? I'd be like, yeah, you might get away with that.
Dude, we didn't have Signar before a year ago. I think I was the only Signar player with the exception of a couple people in Philly that, you know, were on and off. Like, we didn't have Signar. Now we have like 5 or 6, but depending on your meta, I mean, I know people in some metas were like, I can't go anywhere without a Kador player, but I don't see Signar anywhere.
Mm-hmm. What did Michelle, how many Signar players did Michelle face at the tournament you ran? Wasn't
all,
it like
all three?
All three?
Yeah, she got me. Yeah, she got me, Keith, and I think Derek.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess to answer your question though, Pete, now that I've thought about it, I think that for me, it was impressive how many mercs and minions were there, actually. That would be an impressive thing. Not specifically the lists they're playing, because mercs are really, really, really strong. Magnus 2 is like a damn joke in certain matchups. And obviously Osram. And even like there was a guy playing double Cephalix. And I think he was doing pretty well. I saw him next to me at tables a couple times. And I made some jokes to him about trading armies, which he wouldn't do. What an ass. And
no, he didn't want some Constance.
So seeing like you see a lot of mercs and minions, like when you read up and down the list, they're obviously in a good meta place, but usually they're a rare army because they're kind of hard to collect and not a lot of people have them. So that would be like the weird thing that I saw, I think, if I had to answer that question. So
I mean, there was mercs and minions both in the top 8, right? Or something. What was I looking at?
Yeah, because... there was two of us in the top 4. Yeah, because the finals was Mercs and Trolls. That was of Masters, that is. And then...
top 8, you had 2 Mercs, 2 Minions, and then right at 9 was another Mercs. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're around.
Yeah.
And it's obviously... It's a really tough martial army that just beats you up. Like, there's not a shitload of tricks. Like, the bunnies are just going to come over there and kill your infantry. So you better not be in the teardrop formation, which Brad always gets baited into, if you recall.
So, okay, next day was Iron Gauntlet, right?
This is actually the same day.
Same day.
I get done playing Fogle. I literally go, like, inhale a hot dog, and I come back in, and I have to get into round one. So I play Andrew Swedberg, who I'm a fan of him. I've met him at many cons. And we always have like brief conversations, and I always remember his face, and I identify him as an Arcadius player. And I don't know, like, why. I know he's told me at one point he likes Arcadius. But I'm like, there goes that Arcadius guy. So we play, and I know that I'm good into Maelok now because I played Fogel just then. So I'm like, well, I guess Osram first round, right? Because I don't exactly know how I am in Arcadius, but it doesn't feel bad. We have similar numbers and stuff. And I'm like, okay, don't lose to Arcadius. So I go first, and I'm like, what's the threat on all your stupid shit? And he's like, no, 62 and, like, 40. And I'm like okay.
All of it.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, I'll set up and I won't die. So, like, I'm out of, like, the 19 threat of the Warhog, and I'm out of the, like, 25 of the Roadhog, and I camp in case for some reason I'm an idiot. You know, like, whatever happens, right? So, you know, he comes forward, and he kind of surrounds himself with four beasts, and he has up the Watcher spell, which has a different name for him, but it's Watcher. And he puts up Enliven on the right flank, and both of my blasters are in, like, bashers are in, like, really good position. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, can I just, like, bash his beasts over his caster? And I'm like, you know what I'd rather do? I'd rather bash his beasts all into each other and just, like, make a whole shit show of it. That's the job of the basher. For 9 points, can I just go disrupt his whole formation, protect myself, start the engagement, get a money feat? Like, everything's perfect here, right? So I do it, and I kind of ask him, I'm like, you can just watch her between your caster and stop the slam, right? Like, I even, like, say that, and he's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, yeah, okay, that is how that works. So he, like, watchers to the side and tries to knock me down with the critical gore. He doesn't, which is lucky. And I slam him over his caster, and then I follow up, and he's like, oh, they have follow up? And I'm like, yeah, they do. So then I'm on his caster, and the free strike doesn't crit either, so the bunny stands up, the basher stands up, and the basher just kind of does his thing, just, like, rolls around on top of Arcadius, makes him transfer all his fury off, and then I bring the Horgan Hold Forge Cannon over and one-shot him. He had, like, 4 damage from the basher. And it was just, like, a matter of, like, you can keep your stuff alive. But, I mean, I think I immolate that game for him if he keeps his stuff alive. So I actually kind of like the gamble that he took, like, in hindsight. Like, at first I was like, why don't you save yourself? But I think he made a good play into a pretty tough matchup. So I can't judge him. And certainly, you know, anybody's like, oh, you lost round 2, you're an idiot. Like, that's how you feel when you lose. Who's on round 2. But I mean, I know the guy's a good player, and I have respect for him, and I like talking to him. So I know for sure that I think he made an accurate gamble there, and it just didn't pay off, right?
Right.
But basher's fucking stupid. So there's that. So I've taken a little more time talking about all these than I wanted to. We're going into round 2. And this is my right by Aaron Whale, like right next to Aaron Whale. This game I will always remember. This is probably one of the most exciting games I've ever gotten to play, and I was very lucky because it ends up being on stream with Will Pagani, who I know appreciates my stupid army and knows what I'm doing with it because I've talked to him a little about it. He's one of the commentators, and I get to play into Keith Christensen. Now, he plays Gatsby 3, and he is more or less the person who kind of put it on the map with the Slayer spam. And there's a lot of narratives here. It's a pretty hot take here, all right? So we played in the finals last year. And I got him with a Stalker to win Masters. And so now he gets revenge, right? Like, he gets another shot at me, or there's a lot of narratives working here. So he goes first, and he comes forward, and the game really, like, it scripts perfectly for me. I really love the formation. Again, you can watch this game, and I just want to comment more on my thinking. But I love his formation that he's in. I love how I can accept what he's bringing to the table. There's some funnels on the table because there was 2 obstructions, big ones, on that stream table, and they were there all week. Everybody had to deal with them, and I love it. I'm in a wonderful position, except there's some stupid wisp of cloud in the back line, it's just a cloud template, and he puts Vociferin behind it. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. You've talked to somebody. Like, I'm like, this bastard. So Keith is aware. Maybe not, like, fully aware that Vociferin cancels my feat, but he knows something, and he makes me aware that he's aware. And I'm like, okay, my choices are really limited. They're run forward or run forward and feat, right? So I decide, and my thought process is, if I feat, he's bringing Vociferin forward. At least Vociferin's out of the game. And I'm thinking Vociferin's speed 6. I'm thinking he's speed 5. Keith, what's Vociferin's speed? It's 6. God damn it. So now he's 2 inches closer. And then I'm like, wait, can you mobility him? Yep. He finds it on the card, and I'm like, oh my god. So this guy runs 16? What's his command? Like 12? And he's like 9. And I'm like, are you fucking with me? So I have like my whole army is about to be covered by Vociferin, but I go wide and I get a pretty good feed off where I think that I don't care if I get a single soul, and souls aren't really going to do that much for him. Like, he's not going to boost damage on pirates, right? So I'm like, I want you to come over here, and I want you to feel like by stealing my feat from me, you're performing a really great engagement. Now, again, I'm not saying I outplayed him. Maybe he did just perform a great engagement. But whatever it was, I felt like if he came to me that turn, that that would have been my best possible outcome, right? So he comes forward. He has like 3 or 4 slayers on the right. I think it was 4 and 5 on the left, right? The remaining slayers are on the left because of that funnel. And I know that I can win the right flank and take this entire game. I truly feel that way. I know that my Gallant, who's on my right flank, is my strongest fighter. If I Kingmaker and keep him alive the whole game, I will walk this game. I will win with Constance Blaze against my nemesis, Keith, on stream. And it'll be so awesome, and everybody will love me, right? So I'm really excited about it. Everything goes pretty well. I don't think I make any like huge mistakes. And the dice just don't fully come. Now, truly, I have the choice to mess with the dice a little bit. I could have boosted some of the attack rolls on my Precursor Knights, but I just can't roll enough sixes, and I choose to camp focus to make sure I don't get Hellfired. And what basically comes into, or what it basically turns into, is he loses like 2 or 2.5-ish slayers on the right, which is like almost enough for me to be good shape. And then on the left, I kill like 1 or 2, and my Mariner's in the middle of them. He counters and kills pretty much anything I put forward with really, really amazing Night Wretch play. His Night Wretches clear almost all the jamming models. Carapace still affects friendly shots, so he's shooting his own models in the back, not taking any damage. Clears my models out really well and just comes forward, buries Gallant, buries a few dwarves, like really just does a lot of damage. A lot more than I would have liked, that's for sure. So I counter pretty good, but not the best. I don't allocate my dwarves that well. It's hard to follow jack spam boxes. Like, when you're fighting them, you kind of forget who's who. You make bad mistakes, like charge 4 models into like a 4-health slayer. I did something along those lines. Better allocation, a couple of small things changed that game entirely. Another good point would have been my press gangers. They could have come around the right flank, and their job in that matchup, because everybody has a job. I've played this a ton. Those press gangers have to go engage his Night Wretches. They don't have to kill him, which they can do, by the way, but they have to engage him. And because of the forest and the placement and the way that he engaged me, I wasn't able to make that happen either. So there are little, fine little things that affect this game, and they're the things that make it great. And they're why that this is one of my favorite games. So he clears a ton of my models, and I get down to, you know, very few models left. And I'm intelligently, I'd like to think, intelligently holding on to one Precursor Knight in a place where I don't think anything can get him unless he's really hunting for him, and it's fairly inefficient, because I know I can get out of this game if I can activate flank. Okay, so the other day, I wanted Keith to know that this was by far one of the most exciting games I ever had. Now, Keith is a lot more of a wordsmith than me, and I basically told him, you know, that was one of the best games I've ever had, man. I really appreciate it. And he basically said to me that in that game, he got the feeling of, it's really beautiful. He got the feeling of collaboration towards the best possible game from his opponent. And when that happens, it's a treat. And that, I think, is a beautiful statement that everybody can learn from. Keith Christensen, wordsmith. I guess I should have asked him before I used his quote. Anyway, I thought it was beautiful. But my point of interrupting the story before I told you about having flank was I wanted to build suspense here. Okay? Do you guys feel like there's some suspense built at all?
I feel a little.
So much suspense.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. I appreciate it. Well, it can't compare to the suspense that we created in that game, because as soon as he passes turn with where Gatsby is positioned with 2 focus, I put my small dice proxy down and begin explaining my intent of charging him with Constance Blaze. And I start showing him the line of how I can charge the objective. And he's like, okay. And then I show him the line of how I can get the flanking Morrowind. And Keith's hand goes from on the table to like on his face. Like, oh, he just makes the best sound. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to steal this fucking game. And I'm so excited. And he's excited, dude. We're both excited for this dumb shit to happen. It was amazing. It was just such a great feeling to be in that position with two players being like, well, you fucked up. And him being like, man, I can't believe I fucked up like this. I can't believe I'm going to go down like this. So we accurately put the Morrowind model where he can flank the, you know, the objective and him, because I have to flashing blade the objective to death and I have to Crusader's Call to get there. So I'm going to have four attacks, because once I flashing blade the objective to death, I'll refund my charge attack and I'll get to redirect it to him, right? So I charge him and I go, okay, I need sixes to hit. I'm a mat 9, pow 13 weapon master. He has two focus. He's an 18 damage caster. I do roughly, on low averages, I do about 14 damage. So I need Morrow to shine on this game. So we go in, do everything we could possibly do before that. Connie goes in. Her first flashing blade misses. Her second flashing blade misses. And her third flashing blade misses.
So sad. It was so upsetting.
So I camp one. And I'm like, you can't kill me. And he's like, pass turn, win on six. And I'm like, fuck. Oh, man. But, I mean, fuck, dude. Like, how do you beat this shit? Like, how do you beat a game like that going all the way and you being like, I'm out of it. And then you being like, ding, I'm in it. I got a chance, you know? And Connie shows up and she's like, Sunspear.
All I wanted was on stream you to beat Gatsby 3 Slayers with Constance Place. It didn't matter that it was against Keith, although that would have made it a
little bit sweeter. The drama's there, though, man.
Yeah,
the
no, I know.
It was perfect. It was beautiful. And it was great, man. It was a really great game.
Although if you did that, that list would probably never see any kind of nerf, because they'd be like, well, if Constance Place can beat that list, it's obviously fine.
Well, that seems fine. Yeah. So I did get to do all the cool Connie things, because I did, with Whale, get to use my -2 to undead, and then I did get to charge a caster with her. And in my games that I played with her, it was fucking awesome, dude. Like, I looked forward to my next game where I could drop her. And do you see, like, that's kind of the problem, right? Hold on, I gotta open some more of this.
Yeah, load up.
Little cognac action. Ooh, geez. A little spicier than I remember. But I was like, that's the problem, okay? Is I just want to play this fucking list so bad, dude. I just want to play people with it. And I'm sitting there. I'm not like, oh, I hope I don't get a tough guy next round. I'm like, I hope I get a tough guy who has a list I can drop into. But, dude, It was fucking epic, man.
Nah, I'm super happy for you, man. I was super excited that you did well, that it kind of worked out, where it wasn't just like, oh, I got fucked round one by whatever, by bringing Constance Blaze. No, but it was sweet.
Yeah, really love it. And I do want to say one real quick thing, just on the tournament as a whole. The in my opinion, and this is my humble opinion, you know, it can be what it wants to be because it's mine. I think the two best players in the world that I know of, and I know there's good players out there, you know, fuck me, right? I think the two best players in the world are Patrick and Aaron. So Patrick Dunford and Aaron Whale. And I truly think that both of them show integrity. Like, just they're like literally like the players and the accuracy in the game is what we should all strive to have. And like the sportsmanship and just the way that those guys carry themselves, this game has no physical reward. We don't get money. We don't get anything. He got a fucking gauntlet. And I'm sorry, it's a gauntlet. Like, he's not going to go show chicks that gauntlet. He's not going to like bring it to the, well, actually he could bring it to the bar. People would think it's pretty cool. And it's a cool gauntlet. Like, I wanted the fucking gauntlet. All right. I'm jealous, but I'm just saying.
That's the reason you're downplaying it. Cause you wanted,
we don't get anything material. We don't get money. Like, he got a box of Crucible Guard. Like, there's a lot of easier ways to make $100 than fly to fucking Seattle from England and play in a 3-day tournament. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this is a labor of love. And the thing that we get out of this game is not material. It's like the people, the friendship, like the kinship that we find with the people. And then it's like the competitiveness. And those two guys, to me, are like the shining examples. And if you really want me to jerk some more people off, so is Banky. And I know he was in the top four as well. Those three people, I'll even throw him in there for the hell of it. Those people are like the shining examples of what all of us should be from the perspective of, you know, precision, how nice they are as opponents. Like, they're really great people. So when we're down here, us morons playing Constance Blaze, just trying to get some wins, trying to get a shot at, you know, winning a tournament, trying to qualify for the next thing, it's great that, like, the upper players are great people like that. And that's my piece. That's my wordsmith part.
Awesome.
Well put, sir. I don't have anything else to say. I was really happy to hear how all that went. And you're right. I haven't met either of those two, but they're definitely two players that I look up to and strive to be like. So I don't think you can ask for a better finals.
You guys really need to go to Lock and Load. That's what it is. Because that event was really a lot of fun. For the second year in a row, I really enjoyed it. And afterwards, we went to Ruth's Chris. And the problem with going out to dinner after a con, right, is you're like, hey, you guys want to go out to dinner? And they're like, yeah, yeah. And then like they show up and they're like, we told our 6 friends and they told their 14 friends and there's 12 other guys that they came with.
Can we get a table of 32?
Table for 32. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's like, we'll get you a table for 32. I'm sure we got that. Right. So I asked Pagani and I'm like, where should I go eat? And where's a nice place to eat? And I came with 3 people. I came with Mayu and Clint from Orlando. And then Rion, Fancy Ryan, he flew with me, like we came together from Tampa. So I had 4 Florida Meta guys in the house. And by the way, Mayu gave a pretty decent fight using Pigor Shade to Patrick Dunford in the first round on stream. So Florida Meta lost twice in a row on stream because we're fucking entertainers, bro. That's what entertainers do. So I'm there with those guys, and I'm like, I have and Will's like, you know, how much do you want to spend? And I'm like, I don't care, man, like $50 or whatever. Like, we want to go get, like, nice steaks. Like, we had a great weekend. We want to go have a good night with our friends, right? Like, that's what we came to do. So he's like, well, we're going to this place. If you know, maybe you can get a table there. Like, we weren't going to go with them. They already had a giant table. And like I said, you don't want to bring 8 with 12 and, you know, 15 or whatever. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to see if I can get a table there or whatever. Maybe we'll see. We'll wave. But we won't bother you, I promise. So I call this place. And I invited a couple people, and I invited Mick Waters, who I love, and his girlfriend, Alicia, was going to come. And then he invited Chris Orr, who is awesome, you know, more than welcome. And then I invited Michael Ireland, and then obviously Kat's coming with him, which is great. And then they invited Aaron Allen. So now we have 10 people, which is the way it goes, right?
That's how it happens.
I like all these people, so it's not like I batted at a bad average here. I'm excited to be at dinner with all these people. So we're standing in the lobby. And I made a post to all the Florida players. I said, you bring a fucking collared shirt. We're going to go to a nice dinner. All right? You bring it. None of them brought it except for Rion and me. So, like, Clint's wearing, like, a Gators jersey from, like, 92. And Mayu's wearing, like, a torn-up Superman shirt. And I'm like, God damn it, guys. I made a post, like, in the chat saying bring a collared shirt. Like, we'll go to a nice dinner. Nobody did it. So we're sitting there, and I'm on the phone. I'm calling back the steakhouse to be like, hey, do you guys have a dress code? And I can't get them on the phone. So I'm like, there's no way. It's 4:30. Like, not that's the only reason they could have sat us. And then Aaron Allen, like, plops up to me, and he's wearing, like, Crocs and, like, no shirt. And I'm like, what the fuck, Aaron? I'm like, we're going to a nice dinner. And I didn't tell anybody that. And, like, I give all those guys credit because I was basically like, hey, we're going to Ruth's Chris and it's expensive and I'm sorry. And they were all down for it. So I called I called Ruth's Chris and I asked them because the other place did have a dress code. And I called Ruth's Chris and I was like, do you guys have a dress code? And she's like, fuck nah. We're next to a mall. I'm like, so like all 10 of us just sashay in there out of our Ubers. And we ate really nice steaks and we partied for a couple hours and we drank wine and it was beautiful. And McWaters and I stared longingly into each other's eyes and we're kind of in love now. I tried to get him to come on here and
he just couldn't handle his defeat. He couldn't face you again.
Yeah, no, because I whooped his ass at Mox. And he's been like photoshopping pictures. Like he had like a picture of a scar in front of a Connie. But he was clocked out. The game was over when that happened. You can ask anybody, including
Pete,
me.
Pete, we need to quit our government jobs and we need to start one of those here. Because that sounds like the sweetest thing that's ever existed.
Do not even joke about that, because Trish will go look for property like tomorrow. As soon as she hears this, she's going to be looking for property.
You heard it here. We're starting Mox East. Go. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we should do it. But anyway, I mean, yeah, it was great, man. I really have like not a single bad thing to say. It was an amazing weekend. All my games were fucking awesome. And that's like normally like we've talked about it in the past, like going through each game individually is kind of a shit show. But, like, I don't know, man. I liked them all. I couldn't fucking choose two, you know?
Yeah, well, we need to make it out there.
Super jealous.
Sounds really fun.
Next year.
Yeah, maybe for you. Not all of us can fly for free.
So, with that being said, obviously I think we need to talk about all of the, or most of the reveals that happened. So Brandon, you got to see the keynote live. What's your thoughts on the keynote?
It's weird because like I just didn't care that much this year. I'm not saying like that I didn't like it. Like they did just as fine of a job as last time. I was a little put off, and you know that I'm a fanboy. Like I don't want to come in here and be negative. I was a little put off by like them like getting rid of the 12 factions thing. Yeah. I know there had to be a reason, so I understand there's a reason in business. I get that. But it was like, you guys just promised it. We don't overpromise. We underpromise and we overdeliver, right? Like, that's all I tell my guys at work. So to like just come in and be like, we're doing this every year, but not this next year.
Or at all going forward. A little weird, anymore.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. We're so one year in.
There were definitely like really salty Rhett players after the keynote, including Rayon. He was like the saltiest salt to ever salt. And
did he make a poll of how salty he was?
Oh my god, he was no. It was like there was no polls, there was no opinions.
Should we make a poll for how salty he was during Lock and Load?
Clint would love that. But yeah, it was like a little bit weird because they didn't show everybody something like, and they had already set that precedence. So I think everybody came in thinking, okay, we're going to do that again. I think they should have like announced that they were going to kill it before that, before all the players sat there and being like, cool, show me the red. What? Where's my elves? And they got all mad. But Clockatrice was cool. The trencher cannons, the like gun looks horrible. The like shooting cannon, the like one that volley gun, but like the AOE cannon looks fine or whatever. Like they looked playable. The trencher mechanic wasn't that exciting when I found out that they were making a trencher theme because I wanted the pirates more than anything. But
you mean steelheads? Let's back up.
Yeah. Am I saying trenchers?
Yeah, you are.
Yes.
Steelheads.
Yes.
No, I was going to ask what your thoughts were on the removal of the Italian chapter.
The who? What?
The pirates.
So they're not doing the pirates CID anymore. Yeah.
Because but they're good though, right? Like I was just telling you how effective press gangers are, and I think that the solos are okay. They could probably use a little more personal protection. They could probably just visit that theme and get rid of the dodge and do sack pawn. I think Matt said that. That's a really good idea. Sack pawn on the pirate solos. But
are pirates fine? I feel like you already see more steelheads and other things than you do pirates. Is that just a meta thing?
Yeah, it's a meta thing and probably a little better theme. I mean, I don't know, because you can do almost anything in mercs. I think it's just the place people have gone. It's probably better. Steelheads are a little better in numbers than the pirates probably. But I think there's probably games where the pirates could dominate a certain type of army. They're probably better in the medium base infantry too. But I mean, I'm not going to be the one to prove it, at least not like anytime real soon.
And again, I understand from a development perspective that that's not necessarily how things work. You know, it doesn't work like, well, this is better than that, so it doesn't get a CID. But it is interesting because they put that was on the list, you know, and then it was just like, oh no, it's not anymore.
It was a bit of a switcheroo, but we still saw a lot of stuff. They were very open. They showed us those like new games and stuff. And again, I don't really care. I've got my one game, and I'm like really obsessed with it. Don't say it. You don't have to say it.
No, I wasn't going to say it. it's very tough. Like, we have to be realists about it. Like, we need Privateer Press to have another game.
Yep.
So that they can continue to, because we've lost players. We've you know, they've made business decisions. They're doing a lot of production in resin and metal, and that's you know, in-house to control cost. That's my assumption. So we need one of those other games to succeed so that it can help fund and continue to fund War Machine and Hordes. That's the bottom line of it, you know.
I understand what you're saying, and I don't want to be like a negative person. I mean, when I was 8 years old one time, I tried to balance on a nail, not like the pointy side of the nail, like the flat side of the nail. It was sticking out of a board. It was nailed into a board, and I tried to balance on it, and it went through my foot, and I had to go to the ER and get this nail removed and get tetanus shots and stuff, and I think that that was more fun than the last time I played Monster Apocalypse.
I was wondering where you were going with that, so I'm glad.
I'm actually just kidding. It wasn't that bad of a game. I just thought it was really intricate for, like, no reason, and it was way more intricate than I expected it to be, I'll put it that way. Like, throwing each other through the buildings and the fire and the acid. But I own a lot of it, so I guess I can't be that wrong.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm actually with both of you. I don't care, but I do want them to have another product that succeeds. I don't think either of those two games necessarily call to me specifically, but I do want them to be successful because I do want the company to be successful. The Clockatrice exists, so that's a thing that you all can't unknow.
That shit is going to be awesome. I don't care what you say. It's going
to
be great.
I mean, we had to rename a whole chat to Clockatrice Talk and never looked back.
Yep. Spoiler alert, my son is getting four of them for Christmas. I'm going to make it happen.
Nice. I thought it was a Convergence Jack at first, which I know doesn't make any sense because it's obviously
Nightmare. It's like a nightmare of a Convergence person.
Okay.
I think it's what it is.
All right. I'll buy that. I mean, we had a lot of reveals. I feel like we actually got more this year than we got last year, even though it was less factions. Did I make that up?
I think you made it up. I think last year was, like, crazy because, like, they had a pretty rough year, and then they honestly came back out and swung for the fences and did a great job with the next one.
Well, yeah, that first fucking keynote was garbage, so...
I mean, the loudest the crowd got was when they saw the Ancestral Colossal or whatever it is, the battle engine.
Yeah,
the crowd went fucking apeshit.
Yeah, that thing looks really fucking sweet.
Well, there's the artwork. I think it was from one of the first IKRPG things. It may even be from the old Witchfire trilogies. But it's the gate of, like, a scorned city, and on one side is a fully built guardian, and on the other side there's, like, scaffolding. And it's just one of those images that like really sticks out in my mind. And to finally see it realized, that's pretty badass.
But bro, this sword wielding giant statue has assault. So that's a thing. Yeah.
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 Well, I tell you, I mean, for somebody who wasn't like all that excited about the new faction, I bought completely into Crucible Guard because I was sitting there in that store and they had shown the Infernal review. And in the Infernals, they even referenced the Grimkin. They're like, the old witch has her minions or whatever the fuck, right? And then it's like, but we have ours, and he's all pissy, and like the noises, it's like, bong, like the shit comes out. And it was like, they're like a god faction is basically what they said. They're like gods. Well, the Grimkin were like gods or whatever. They were like lords of hell, and I thought that was neat and everything. But I was like sitting in there, and I was like, I want the Crucible Guard, because they're just like bros with guns. Like, please leave us alone. They're not like gods or anything. They're just like guys with chemicals and shit that are just like shooting people and like throwing acid on them. And I was like, you know what? That's me. I like that shit. I don't like Jedi. I like Rebel Troopers. Like, that's fucking dope.
I actually am really about Infernals, but I have to. I'm such a game mechanic person. I don't give a shit about the fluff. So to me, if whatever they're, because they're not going to use focus, they already said. I was super surprised that they weren't a Hordes faction. But they're not going to use focus or fury. So depending on what their mechanic is, I might be all in. But I don't really. You know, that to me that matters more than everything else.
So I caught a little bit of the Primecast Live that they did from Lock and Load, and during the lore part with C-Cat, They started talking about infernals and their acquisition of souls and what they can do with souls. And it was interesting. They were making a bunch of jokes about, oh, well, how many souls would it take to make a hat? Because I guess the infernals can make stuff manifest with souls.
Okay.
And they were saying, well, like, you would need 1/12 of a soul to make a hat. But then they were saying, you know, if you had like a bunch of souls, maybe you could make something big manifest. So I wonder if that was kind of a hint as to this is going to be like a Deep Strike army where they have a pool of souls and you would, you know, oh, I can go ahead and spend 6 souls and have this light appear, or 12 souls and I've got these guns that appear.
That'd be weird.
You'd have to start with them though, right? Like, cause I mean, otherwise you could just potentially get totally fucked in some match. Like, I don't.
Oh, great. An entire faction that hard counters call me.
Yeah.
Well, what if
get fucked, what, Brandon?
What if, like, you didn't have to, instead of points, you had souls and you could literally, like, oh, okay. This turn I'm going to deploy 30 of my souls. And you put those on, you put those models on the table, and the next turn you can do another 10. Who knows?
I never thought about that. That's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, I didn't think about it either.
I could be completely off base here because I don't, you know, fuck, who knows how it's all going to work.
It's going to be a Travis Marg model. They already confirmed it.
Yeah, they did. That's cool. They did confirm it. I believe he's the name of a feat, one of their feats, correct?
Could be all lanky and weird looking. Love that guy.
So what else did they talk about? There was a lot of shit in the dev talk. I don't want to go too into
that. I didn't go over there at all. Honestly, I played all day, every day. Like, I played both events to the end, so.
There was a lot of stuff coming out about the Rhett CID.
Oh, Brennos. I saw the Brennos change today. I was reading through them, and a lot of those circle changes were, like, cool quality of life. Like, congrats. But the Brennos one sounded really cool. He, can't remember now.
I got it.
He did something really sweet. He was like, no. And he had a really great Animus. Oh, he had fucking Castigate as an Animus.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, it was, hold on, I literally was just looking at this before we started. He's going to cost 15, def 12, Animus is Arcane Protections, while within 10 inches you can't channel spells. Morvana can channel with him with her bond. Condition changes to Sights of Spring. Combat stats unchanged and not added into any theme forces.
So yeah, I won't go through all those, but I remember reading him and being like, that's strikingly good, because Castigate is really good at 10 inches as an anime.
And again, I mean, 10 inches. This is like pre-CID shit, so I mean, this is the stuff we're going to see them start week one, so obviously that's all subject to change. I was excited to see Desters get see some changes. Again, we'll see if they stick, but losing Assault, Gunfighter, and Quick Work for dual attack, close volley, so if they charge and hit with their lance, they auto-hit with their gun, which is now PAL 14. I think that's... I don't know. I'm not saying that's too much, too little. That's a great start. Might be.
Well, it's all of those rules condensed into one simple thing.
Yes.
If you hit, you get to do it. Like, that's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
Gorshade
4.
Yeah, Gorshade 4 is sick. Nuala's,
if they push for a clause that takes the closest souls on Gorshade 4, I'm going to try to get Connie added to the Rhett CID.
Nice.
I already told Pagani, don't try me.
Nuala's mini feet is just pants on head crazy.
Changing the prey?
Yep, the ability to reassign the prey target.
I mean, it's good, but I don't know if it's pants on head crazy. I don't know if your pants on my head.
So as somebody who wrongly misplays prey all the time, I love it.
Yes, it helps bad players.
Yes.
Well, there's still things. You kill everyone but one guy, and they run it to the back of the table, and you're just dicked out of prey for the rest of the game.
It's just like starting the chain, similar to like a Gerhardt feat or a Heretic. I won't call it a feat. Arcana. It's being able to choose the correct target right at the time, and you're choosing easy targets. So if they're jamming you, and there's only 3 of those jamming models, I'm going to +2 versus those 3 models real quick. Now I'm putting it on the medium in front of me that's got 5 health. Make sure I kill that. Now I'm moving it to this guy over here. Make sure I do some damage to him. That's what makes it strong. Yeah.
So I think my favorite part, as somebody who's kind of wanted this for some time, is that they said that the smaller group of new releases is going to allow them to do CIDs for legacy models and have like related ones grouped together. And I'm really excited if that comes to fruition. Now, I know last year we were talking about how we're, oh, hey, if you're a Grimkin and Convergence player, you're excited because you're going to get a model every year no matter what, because we're doing 13 factions, and now that's not a thing. So who knows if this shifts in another year or so. But the thought of them doing legacy model CIDs instead of just, oh, it's the Signar CID turn, here's your new theme force, your six new models, and a couple reworks on like one legacy thing, I think that's the route to go from here going forward, so we don't go down the road of crazy amount of model bloat. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Honestly, when you say it like that, I mean it. Like, their decision is the right decision, ultimately.
Of course.
Like, I know that's kind of fanboyish to say, but truly it is, because they're the only ones who know the speed of the game and the production.
Yep.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like, my initial reaction there that I said was probably the same way everybody felt. But I guess if you really sit and think about it for more than 25 seconds, what they do and at the pace they do it is the correct pace. Because they know what they can handle, right?
Yeah, I just for, I mean, just trying, thinking about it from looking at what we got with, you know, using my own faction with the Trencher shit, and then to do that again in another year or sooner. Just to me, I don't know. I'm more excited, I think, to see legacy models get brought back up than for new shit all over the place.
Yep. Yeah. I'm in agreement.
And then the last thing I think that's on here, or not even on here, the thing that I want to talk about is, Brandon, you bought into Crucible Guard. I think we will probably do a full Crucible Guard episode, maybe not by the time we get around to it, but do you want to talk about Crucible Guard at all? Your thoughts on some of them? I know you're kind of part of the Crucible Guard think tank that's been talking a lot.
Yeah, I'm the bad part of the think tank.
Well, we know that, but
I think the strongest part of Crucible Guard is their mercenary unit. Whatever mercenary unit you take, you attach Morley. Morley makes them tougher, stronger. He makes almost anything into Stormblades. You can make Sword Knights. Sorry, not Sword Knights. Where the hell did I get Sword Knights? Steelheads into Stormblades with like multiple casters. Sevestro, for example. 15 defense, 15 POW, charging mat 7, Pathfinder, set defense. Like, I mean, it goes on, right? Like, and he can make them tough for the turn with no knockdown, blah, blah, blah. So the Merc unit is, in my opinion, their strongest unit. Mm-hmm. The Assault Troops, which are the 13-point melee, hammer-wielding, medium-base guys, very, very well-costed. Basically like a little tiny squad of Stormblades that are really hard to remove at range, so they go get the job done. They're just enough models to do the job. They're just enough cost. Like, they're perfect. Like, I actually have two in almost every unit while we have limited release. And then you have the Rocketmen, which are one of the premier harrying forces that they've ever added to the game. I don't like the weapon attachment. I understand wanting more bodies. That's been the argument that I've heard from other people. But I think that the weapon attachment doesn't do the job they want to do all the time. But they are one of the best harrying units that have ever been made. Better than Crows, probably better than Idrian's. Yep, I'll stick by that. Probably wrong. but yeah, I mean, like, they will just dominate a flank versus many models that want to be on a flank. Now, of course, they can be chased away by a Jack. Now, you can fix them with casters like Lucas. They have a couple of ways to damage buff for them, caster-related ways. And then, of course, you can get real deep into the process of debuffing your targets using your millions of models that debuff. So anything is a threat in Crucible Guard, provided that you send a model they can debuff, right? I think, to me, they are excellent at trading. They're very good at the martial aspect of fighting. So they'll line up and they will engage your army. And if you just stand there and bang with them, they're going to kill you. Is that a generic statement? I think they're just a little bit like a Signar where they want to be, but there's not as many tricks.
Yeah.
And you read them and you think there's tricks, but there's really not, right? Like, they're like negative 2 defense. That's not a trick. It's just like, I hit you and I've lowered your defense. They don't have like a kill the guy that's behind the cover over there with this leap or anything goofy.
No, but they do kind of feel like my first instinct when I looked at them was I felt that they were kind of like a mix between Signar and Krix. Is that like, does anyone, do you get that feel?
I think the debuff aspect gives people that in, that inclination. They really feel like mercs, truly, because they're like, you look in your back line and you're like looking in your briefcase and you're like, what do I do? And that's how you feel like kind of when you're playing mercs and you like pull from your back line and you like throw your Hutchuck bomb on somebody first and then you kill them. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
I will say, I really do like the what they did with the medium base models, where instead of relying on like armor buffs or whatever, just arm 16 boxes and then fucking carapace. Like, I think I think that's really a good really design. Really good design for medium base infantry.
Excellent design. The casters are awesome, right? Sylvestro is very, very good. Everybody kind of has taken him to be like one of the better casters. He's very generic. You can play him out of both themes. Gerhardt is really good. I still love the Juice guy. He's really hard to test because you jump people and kill them immediately, or you like throw a bunch of dumb shit at people and they don't die, and then you're like, well, I have 5 health, so I guess just kill me, asshole. It's like really rough.
Yeah, I'm so confused by his play, because it seems it's like, all right, so you're just going to like take damage until you get to that, and hope you don't die until you get to that feat turn where you're gonna just be like, okay, I'm 18 focus.
You play him for his debuff. He's got 2 pretty good upkeep spells in Mirage, and he has the, I think it's like an armor debuff, if I recall. That sounds right.
Looking at him now. Yeah, Disintegration to -2 armor.
Well, he has the armor debuff. I'm sorry, I knew he had that. He has an armor buff, is what I mean.
Oh, Iron Flesh, yeah.
He has 2 upkeeps, so he's maintaining some effects on his army for cheap. And he's disintegrating targets for an additional debuff to help lower POW models like kill, like your Rocketman. I think he's a great Rocketman caster. And then if they open up, you kill them. So I don't think I would go past 6 tokens. I think I would like go to 3, monitor the way the game's going, heal myself some that next turn, try to maintain it where you don't have that much damage on yourself. And if you're at 6 and you're like, this motherfucker has a forest, or they're just like not something you're ever going to get with it, maybe start dropping your tokens off a little bit. But it's tricky because like if you drop and they come out and they're like, haha, and you're like, hey, what are you doing? It's really a weird caster. You got to like the design though. I mean, he's really bizarre.
Yeah. I think I like Sylvestro, and then Gerhardt. I think those are the 2 that I'm like, I'd be all about.
I bought that big shitbag Vulcan for like no reason.
you did say that.
Well, they had no heavies there, so I was like, well, I'm going to play this at GigaCon in 2 weekends, and then I was like, oh, this is not going to be legal. Although there was a lot of implications directed at me that basically the new rule as of this next Steamroller very well could be, and you heard it here first, folks, Jesus Christ, you heard it here first, folks, I've been drinking. Essentially, if you have the model, you can play it. That's going to be the rule.
Wow.
If you have the physical model, it's legal in a tournament.
I'll rework that statement. If you have it in War Room and you have the model, you can play it. That's the way I understand it.
Well, that seems to make sense based on what they did with Kane Zero and the other stuff. Like, usually the pre-release stuff wasn't legal, and then it was, and then it wasn't again. So now it just, oh, yeah, today's the release date. So I don't know. I guess we'll see if they make an official announcement on that. McKay's also probably still broken. I don't know. I don't want to be the person to say that, but I think she might still be.
I don't either. I don't like huge bases.
As
a rule, I don't like traveling with them. I don't remember when I had to have my Wraith engines in one bag. So like I'm walking on the fucking plane with 2 big bags, and I'm like, I hate my life. I traveled with Mercs just now. I had it all in one little bag, and I was just like, hell yeah, this is living.
But you didn't get to come home with a fucking frog statue, so was it even worth it?
It was worth it for Brad to not get beat this weekend.
Oh, shit. No, what were you saying about the huge base caster, though?
I don't want to play it because it's annoying as piss to pilot it. Yeah. Like, what if there's like a wall near your deployment zone and all your trains are just running into each other trying to get past the wall like idiots?
Can't you just use least disturbance? Fix that?
Stop.
Oh, shit.
You had to bring that up?
Also, depending on your theme, you either got plus 2 inches or plus one to go first, so you're probably okay.
You get plus two to go first, which you should probably do if you want to shoot trains at people.
You could also do that, yeah.
You know who wants to be the train specialist? Tom Gwan. We're going to get him a little conductor's uniform. It's going to be awesome.
Nice.
Train Gwan.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. All right, man. Well, I think we'll call it there. Didn't we have a story we were going to end with? We talked about it before Pete got on. Oh, did you? Was it the food? Was it the restaurant story? All right.
That Water's cheating his fucking face off to try to show you guys that he beat my Constance list, which he 120% did not do. So if you guys hear that, that's...
I just don't know who to not believe more, because I know you both. So I don't know.
He's just such like a liar. Like,
Pete, who are we buying here?
Matt's got a liar's face.
So the problem is I've only heard claims from Brandon.
Right.
So I
right.
don't know. It's like that scene in Labyrinth where you've got the two door knockers and the one's like, he lies all the time. Like, this is what it is. It's a logic test.
Well, the thing is that I have seen several games of Brandon's that he has then recapped. So I know his propensity to,
tell the truth.
To be very honest, yeah.
And truthful.
Yep.
I think I should shout out Charles Soon because I stole his list completely. See, that's me telling the truth. And that's what I do. I tell the truth. Also, Charles, like, for some reason, replies to me when I message him at like 4 a.m. Although I think he's in Australia right now, so it could be a different time there. Oh, that's true.
Could be a different time there.
Could be.
Heard it here first. Yeah. Australia could be in a different time zone.
Hot takes.
Oh, shit. All right.
God damn it. That's great. All right. That's enough. Let's get out of here. That's great. maybe we'll try to do Crucible Guard next week, like in depth, or we fucking won't. We'll do something else. I don't know. I'm out.
If I somehow get to play him at GigaCon, I can come like give you like a little review.
Yes.
And, tell you how like my limited faction did, because I'm excited to play him. So.
Yeah, that would be sweet. Actually, I'd be curious to hear how you're doing with them.
Yeah, you don't have to convince me. I'll have to come talk to you for a while, so that's good. All right, man. I'm excited.
All right, buddy. Yep. Congrats again on not scrubbing out with Connie really quick. Like, that's what I'm going to call the win. So
thank you guys for the support. It was pretty cool.
Always.
Like, showing you guys the games and you guys barely keeping the secret. And I think the most important thing is we all need to remember Snooty. R.I.P. Snooty.
All right. That sounds good. Let's call it there. I'm Grant.
I'm Pete.
I'm Brandon.